Welcome on board a daily adventure to discover true wisdom, authentic hope, a stronger faith, and profound joy. Yeah. Yeah. Hey. This is the Debbie Chavez Show.
You're the shining star, no matter who you are. Shining bright to see, what you can truly be, what you can truly be.
Welcome, friends and neighbors. It is great to be back together again as we journey through this life together toward hope, wisdom, and joy. And coming up today, we're going to have some hope on the way for spouses out there, whether your wife's listening, whether your husband's listening. It's for both of you. And maybe you've been married a few years and things seem, well, not the same as they used to be. You know, you just sort of drifted apart, which is so easy. I mean, that just happens in relationships so easily, doesn't it? And after a while, you look at each other and go, yeah, you know, I'd rather be with someone else. You're not really, you know, all it for me anymore. Well, that can happen in relationships. And we're going to talk about how to rekindle that special connection with your spouse, how to rekindle intimacy with your spouse in just a few minutes with some folks who've been there, done that. So that'll be coming up in just a moment. Later on in the hour, in our faith and lifestyle section, a new study reveals how the recession has impacted U.S. marriages. And also, researchers discover some amazing health benefits from staying in love, from being married. Ooh, that's going to be interesting. And then much later on in the hour, in our health news segment, a new study reveals chocolate as perhaps the next great superfood. Woohoo! This is cause to rejoice for sure. So I'll tell you all about that coming up later on in the hour. But first, as usual, we like to start out by giving you hope and building your faith through today's true story, displaying the power of redemption.
And
okay, today's true story demonstrates Jesus' power to redeem a broken marriage, a severely broken marriage. And I was talking to a lady just yesterday. We took a walk together, and I'm not going to use her name, although I don't even think she would care, but I'm not going to use her name. She'll remain anonymous. But she was telling me her story of her very broken marriage. And just to give you a quick synopsis as to how broken it was, she discovered that her husband had been cheating on her multiple times with multiple different people, into pornography, having multiple affairs. I mean, even going so far as to be sexual with prostitutes. I mean, you know, this is not good in a marriage, right? And at first, she didn't know any of this stuff. She just sensed something was wrong. And you know, women's intuition, right? I mean, I don't know. God's blessed women with that discernment where we just know that we know that we know that something is wrong. And, you know, she couldn't prove anything. She couldn't put her finger on anything, but she just knew it. And her husband was traveling a lot and away a lot. And she just knew that something was wrong. And so here's the cool thing about how Jesus redeem situations. You know, in 2 Corinthians 10, it says, though we live in the world, we do not wage war as the world does. The weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds. And you know, that's exactly what she did. She started praying. You know that Stormy O'Mardian book, The Power of a Praying Wife? Well, this was what this lady did. She just started praying. She started praying that the Holy Spirit would convict her husband. And she prayed that fervently. And you know, that reminds me too of another great verse in James 5, where it says the prayer of a righteous man is powerful and effective. And I believe you can say the prayer of a righteous woman is powerful and effective. I think you can go with either gender there. And her prayers were powerful. In fact, when I was asking her, well, when do you think was that pivotal moment that things changed for your husband? I mean, what was that moment? And I was expecting her to say something about, you know, he went to church and this happened, or you know, a friend confronted him or whatever. But you know what? She said it was really a prayer thing, because all of a sudden, boom, he basically started confessing to her. She believes it was just the answer to her prayer that the Holy Spirit was convicting him because he was a believer and had just gotten, well, grossly off track, obviously. But he had already committed his life to Jesus years ago. And so she believes it was the Holy Spirit convicting him just as she had been praying. And he finally basically started confessing what had been going on. And you know, when you do that, oh my goodness, then that stranglehold that Satan has on you is lifted when you drag the junk from the darkness into the light. That's when the strongholds are torn down. And so that's exactly what happened for she and her husband. And the redeeming part of this even further is that now Jesus is using him, this very man who had done so much wrong, he's using him to encourage and inspire other men, and he's talking to other men at his workplace about God and following God, and, you know, isn't that just amazing? Oh, no marriage is too broken for Jesus to save it, and a lot of how it is saved is through the power of prayer. There you go. Hope that inspires you today. Well, speaking of marriages, we'll have a little clean segue here to talk to our guests, which are a pastor and a pastor's wife. It's Hugh and Cindy McMenamin. Hi, thanks for joining me.
Hi there, Debbie.
Great to be with you.
Well, I'm glad that I have both of you on the line. I wasn't sure if it was just going to be Cindy, but I'm glad that Hugh has joined us as well.
I'm excited, too.
Yeah, and you're, in California, right?
That's right.
In Southern California.
Debbie, you did a great job with the last name, too. I'm proud of you.
Well, hey, thank you so much. Well, you've written a great book called When Couples Walk Together, 31 Days to a Closer Connection. And boy, you know, this can happen so easily that we can drift apart. You know, when you get married, you're just in this kind of la-la, you know, fairy tale thing about, oh, we're always going to just love each other. We will be different than all other couples, of course, because we love each other differently than everybody else. And yet, you can start out with these great intentions and find yourselves drifting apart. Hugh, where were you guys at? It sounds like after a period of years, you found yourself in the same predicament.
Yeah, you know, Debbie, we kind of joked that we wrote this book for ourselves, primarily. We know we needed to really, you know, enhance our marriage and find ways to get closer together. But also as a pastor, I've worked with a lot of couples that usually when they come to a pastor or a counselor for help, it's usually almost too late.
Yeah.
So we wrote this book, hopefully, to prevent marriages from getting to that really point of desperation and help them really heal and connect before it gets too late.
Yeah, yeah. And so was it starting to become bumpy for you guys at some point? And how many years went by before you noticed, I think we're drifting apart?
Well, I think a lot of it's personality. I tend to be kind of independent, do things on my own, yet needy. That seems kind of like a dichotomy. And Hugh kind of tended to operate kind of solo. And I started realizing we're together, but we're not really together.
Yeah.
We're living under the same roof. Everything seems fine, but are we really connecting in a way where are we sharing our dreams together anymore? Mm-hmm. Are we praying together anymore? Are we really feeling connected? And it's that disconnect that can wear, especially on a woman after a while, and pretty soon she says, you know, I don't even know you anymore.
Yeah, yeah. And then you start reading romance novels or watching the romantic comedies and thinking, I want a connection like that. And then you think, well, obviously this husband is not providing the connection I need. I mean, now what am I supposed to do now? And that's where a lot of people get into trouble, don't they?
I see that a lot of times in my ministry to women. And, of course, Hugh and I see it, too, just as a pastor and his wife, just, you know, in the church as well.
Absolutely. Okay, so one of the keys, Hugh, in fact, I think it was what you discussed on day two, is this notion of leaving self on the shelf. Would you like to explain that?
Yeah, that I kind of took the lead on that chapter because I realized I was on a plane once and I was going to a speaking engagement and I was complaining to God in prayer that my husband was not everything that I had hoped and wanted. And God, what were you thinking? And this might have been 15 years into the marriage, maybe.
Yeah.
And it was like God had kind of gently nudged me upside the head to say, Cindy, it's not all about you.
Ooh.
Maybe I had some plans for him and
Ouch.
How I wanted to encourage his life through you.
Ouch.
And wow, that shouldn't have been a huge revelation.
Mm.
But again, I went back to Genesis and the Bible. I was created to be his helpmate.
Absolutely.
And how have I been helping him, or have I just been insisting he be that romantic notion of what I wanted? And I think that was a turning point for us. I came home and I shared with him what I said, and I think he felt a little relieved because for a long time he believed that I had these expectations for him that were just out of reach.
Wow, that is so huge. In fact, that's something that we're discovering here. We have a little wives ministry in Bellingham called Squadron of Sisters.
I saw that on your website. It's
yeah,
great.
Yeah, and you know, that's exactly the verse that we're hanging our hat on is Genesis 2:18. Mm. And it was a revelation to so many of the wives in the room that we're designed to be our husband's helper. And it was like they just looked at me like a deer in the headlights, like, what? I never heard that before. I'm supposed to be my husband's helper? You mean it's not all about me? And mm-hmm. yet... the interesting thing is that as women have stepped out of themselves and said, you know, I'm going to try to help my husband, they have been so blessed. Have you found the same thing to be true?
I have found the same thing. In fact, I just wrote a book that's out in July about that, A Woman Inspiring Her Husband.
Wow.
But the same principle applies in when couples walk together. Mm-hmm. Often the wives are the one holding out for what the husband must do to change for
yeah.
that marriage to work. Mm. And when a wife goes to her husband and says, I'm willing to do my part and help you,
yes.
well, that can turn a man around.
Oh, my goodness. Hugh, what has that meant to you as a guy to know that your wife is there to help you?
It's been huge, Debbie. You know, leaving self on the shelf, you know, when I work with couples and that are in premarital counseling, you know, I always remind them about that this is something that you're doing, you know, primarily on behalf of the other person.
Yeah.
And then I start asking myself, you know, am I doing that? Am I, you know, living out what I'm telling these couples? And so that was a real checkpoint for me to make sure that that I was, you know, putting, you know, my wife first and instead of my needs. But it's been a real help when just defining those roles, understanding how God made us and designed us and how we're to work in partnership with one another.
Now, you know, of course, there isn't a Genesis 2:18 command for the husbands to be the wives' helper. So how have you as a husband grabbed hold of this notion of dying to self and putting self on the shelf? What does that mean perhaps from a husband's perspective?
I think it means, Debbie, you know, really trying to understand what my wife needs in her life.
Mm-hmm.
We went to a marriage conference a few years back, and I came away realizing what Cindy needs as an individual. And what came out of that was a small little note that I taped to the dashboard of my car that said, touch more, talk more.
Hmm.
And it was just a simple statement, but I realized that's what my wife needs on a more regular basis,
uh-huh.
just every day.
Yeah.
And part of our book, because it's 31 days, is to find those little ways, those simple ways, simple acts of love, or you can do some small things that just keep you connected and really meet regular needs of your spouse.
Yeah. I want to talk about a cute little story that I bet you a lot of husbands and wives can relate to. And it really brings up a point. You talk about becoming taking the tense moments, those frustrations with your spouse, and handling it a different way. But you say, Cindy, that Hugh was really ticking you off when you went on a date night or something and you were going into a restaurant. Can you tell us the story?
Yes, it was a situation where I didn't realize it, but I guess I was kind of taking the lead that evening, and it was bugging him, and I didn't know until he made it clear that he was bugged. And when we sat down at the table, and I said, we'd rather sit over there, and I then told him what we wanted to drink, and I was just totally taking the lead, thinking I'm helping my husband,
yes.
or maybe just thinking of me. And he kind of slammed his keys down on the table, and I thought, well, what? You know, and it was just tension. And then how do you get out of that tension?
Yes.
And, you know, I would say something to him, and he was just kind of being short or wouldn't respond. And I remember thinking, I just want to get up and leave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm not going to enjoy a nice time at this dinner,
mm-hmm.
then why bother? And it took the way that story turned out is I had talked with Hugh later, found out what was going on in his mind, and he's the one that consciously decided, I'm going to extend here. And he said, you know, let's just order something we've never had before. You know, let's be adventurous. And suddenly the little boy came out in him, and I realized he was trying to make amends. And rather than hold on to the fact that he really ticked me off when we got there,
yes.
We just kind of relaxed and enjoyed the rest of the evening.
Yeah,
it's important to know how to make that tense moment into a tender one so it doesn't really ruin your evening and then
yes.
the rest of the week.
And going back to the example, I mean, you know, how many times do women, I don't know if it's because of more women in the workplace these days or what it is, but we tend to often want to take over the leadership, whether it was you wanting to say where we're going to, what table we're going to pick, and you're just saying what food we're going to order or whatever. And for a guy, that's kind of like, hey, I wanted to open the door. I wanted to be the one that takes care of you. And sometimes we trample on the guys, don't we, Hugh?
It does happen. I don't think it's intentional.
No.
phrase out there called a controlling efficiency, you know, and I think sometimes, you know, wives really think they're helping and,
yes.
and taking the burden off. And sometimes the guy just, he wants to be, you know, the knight in shining armor.
That's
he wants
right.
to be the guy that pulls out the chair and,
yes.
And sits down and with them and do a little more of that and actually, you know, be that person leading at the point where, you know, wives really, I think, really appreciate.
Yeah, yeah, I can so relate to this because there have been times where I've done this with my husband and he's like, you know, I am perfectly capable of ordering or whatever. I'm like, oh, okay. But back to the point of taking these tense moments and turning them into something tender, and you give some really practical ideas like an inside joke or something just the two of you share can kind of take away the tension, or just a calm touch, reaching across the table and holding their hand could reduce the tension, or making your spouse laugh. You say that Hugh will pull a geek face on you, right, and that it makes you smile?
That's right. You know, just something like that, or just putting his pinky finger out there so I can grab it, kind mm-hmm. of as a way of saying, I know you don't want to hold my whole hand, but will you just take my finger? And that's another move that softens my heart.
I love it.
He humbles himself, and I end up doing that too.
That's good stuff. Okay, and another thing to, again, establish or rekindle that intimacy or that connection has to do with finding things to praise in your spouse. Give us some ideas there.
Okay, well, you know, so often we can be focused on the negative, and
oh, yeah.
in the chapter, Praising the Positive, some of that is just going back and looking at what is the character and personality and heart of my husband behind this action, or, okay, my wife's talking a lot, but what's she really trying to do here? She's trying to make me feel more comfortable in the situation or something, and it's about going back to those things that caused us to fall in love in the first place, and recognizing them as a positive rather than a negative. In other words, when I first met my husband, my youth pastor had told me, you know, he's the moodiest guy I know. And
oh.
I said, Hugh is not moody. Hugh is very reflective.
Oh.
He's a deep thinker.
Mm-hmm.
He's, you know, and I so admire that. It's so different from
yes.
me. And he actually thinks about something before he says it.
Hmm.
Well, today, that can annoy me if he's not responding enough
right.
or if he's a little too quiet. And I have to go back and say, okay, how did I see him when I fell in love? Mm-hmm. That's how I need to see him today. And
absolutely.
I need to praise that mm-hmm. in him when I see it. Hey, thank you for not just running off at the mouth when you were upset the other day. Thank you for thinking about that and then talking to me in a way that helped the situation mm-hmm. rather than hurt it.
That's good. When we come back, we're going to get to more great ideas on how to rekindle connection. And one of them does not seem, it seems counterintuitive, and it has to do with giving each other space. So we'll talk about that and more with Cindy and Hugh McMenamin, their new book, When Couples Walk Together.
If you've been helped by this program, please consider making a tax-deductible donation to help us continue providing the Debbie Chavez Show. You can give securely online at faithplace.org.
Looking to try something new for dinner? Something to bring the whole family together that everyone will enjoy? Visit Hemplers.com for some great dinner ideas, like sausage jambalaya, easy ham recipes, and some satisfying soup suggestions. Hemplers Meats is a family-owned business on a mission to provide top-quality selections of ham, bacon, and sausage, made with no fillers and flavored with natural spices. And now with a complete line of nitrate-free products. For more information and where to purchase Hemplers Meats, go to Hemplers.com.
Ladies, if you're looking for someone who's willing to get real about the challenges in marriage and who can bring fresh insight into God's purpose for wives, bring Debbie Chavez to speak at your next women's conference or retreat.
Okay, so let's correctly identify that our husband, even if he is behaving badly, he is not our enemy. Satan is the enemy. Satan's the one that comes to your husband and says, I think you should stay out all night partying at the bar and taking home women who throw themselves at you. That's the devil that throws that temptation in their way. Okay? It's also the devil that tempts us to not do anything. I've learned that you can't live in fear. And I think that's the root cause of so much of what we women do when we enable. It's all based in fear. We live in this place of fear and it paralyzes us, doesn't it? The thing is that if you don't confront, you eventually become so resentful, so bitter, that after a period of years, you're going to be the one that leaves.
To arrange for Debbie to teach and inspire women at your event, go to DebbieChavez.com.
Join me on the next Carolyn Merriman Show, where I will offer help for spouses married to people who have experienced childhood trauma. Stay tuned 10 minutes after the Debbie Chavez Show on faithplace.org.
Back on the program with the pastor and pastor's wife, that would be Hugh and Cindy McMenamin, their book, When Couples Walk Together. And we're just getting a bunch of helpful hints about how to reestablish that intimacy, that connection with each other. Before we talk about giving each other space, which I have to hear you explain that one, let's talk about the power of a note. You guys discovered this little trick, right?
Right.
Yeah, and a little in the earlier segment, Debbie, I was talking about that little note that I pasted on the dashboard of my car as just a constant reminder of what my wife needs on a regular basis from me.
Mm-hmm.
And a note to myself, in fact. But yeah. Cindy's got another story about a note that that took place that I gave her one time that really ministered to her.
Yeah, I was having one of those days when everything I seemed to touch was failing, and I had had a not good situation with my daughter, and I was feeling like a lousy parent, and I had let down a friend, and I came home, and I put my stuff on my desk, and I was about ready to sit down and cry, and I saw this note that Hugh had put there. It was just this little pink note, and he put a little artificial flower next to it, and it said, "Love you, wife."
Aww.
And there was nothing that really made, we didn't fight that morning, there was nothing that really made him do that, but it's just looking at that, I did end up crying, but good tears, and I just said, thank you, God, that I have somebody who reached out to me. And he didn't know what I would be encountering at the time that I saw the note.
Mm-hmm.
He just left it there. Mm-hmm. And I found that that's how the Holy Spirit works sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God can just kind of nudge us to do something. We might not know why.
Mm-hmm.
Never know what the other person's going to be feeling at the moment when they see that note. So there is power there in leaving an encouraging note for somebody.
Indeed, and you give some ideas in the book of things to say, and you know, put a sticky note on his car dashboard or steering wheel. You know, just little things that are unexpected. And what that really says is, I'm thinking of you. It's kind of like a little wink, you know, but through a note, right?
Exactly, Debbie. You know, Cindy travels a lot, and what I try to do is, as she's packing her bags and getting ready to leave for that trip, I'll just write three or four little notes, just a couple words, and I'll fold them up and stick them in little places in her in her suitcase. So when she's gone and away, and she's unfolding things and unpacking things, she'll find that there, and it's just an encouragement as we're apart.
It's
very simple. Doesn't take a whole lot of effort, but the intention of it behind it really goes a long way.
Oh, my husband has been so good with that as well. And if I'm traveling, he'll put little pre-written notes that that I can open each day, that with just some thoughts and such. And you know what that says to me is that he cares enough, he loves me enough to take the time even to do that. You know, it's just kind of makes your heart feel nice and warm. So good idea. All right, let's get to this one that doesn't really seem to make any sense, and this idea that but you put it in the book, so there must be a good merit here. Giving each other space. Now, how does that actually foster intimacy or connection?
That doesn't make sense because we're women, Debbie, and we never want space. We want to be close and together.
That's right.
But this one, I had to learn in looking at the personality of my husband and I believe the makeup of a male. So, Hugh, talk about why you need space.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, you know, that there's times, Debbie, when, you know, men really need to be able to sort their thoughts out, especially if they've been at work all day and they're working with clients or customers, whatever their work environment is. You know, I think they sometimes need a real transition space, you know, before they get into home, and then, you know, the wife is ready to discuss everything that happened in her day.
Yes.
A lot of times men just need to decompress and unpackage the things of the day. And space alone, I think, gives guys time to do that, to check their spirits, to check their hearts, just to check with God, and to be able to sort out those things that are on their minds so that when they have to respond to their wife and something comes up, they've had a little time to, you know, to rest and just space to themselves to relax and get ready for that.
Boy, this resonates with us in our marriage. Raul will sometimes go smoke a cigar down at the waterfront. Now, and you know what? For him, he comes back always, 100% of the time, in a better mood. He's ready to take on the challenges of whatever because he just needed that alone time, I guess, alone time with God, perhaps. So that's a great idea.
I remember in the early years of my marriage reading that absence makes the heart grow fonder, much more so with men than with women, and I'm seeing that. Times when I've gifted Hugh with some space, he'd say, man, I really want to go to this concert coming up, you know, a Celtic Woman concert or something like that, and I'd say, I'm completely booked that weekend, I can't go. But rather than thinking that means he can't go, just, you know, giving him the tickets and saying, hey, go out and enjoy that time.
Yeah.
That's also a gift of trust. That's saying, I'm fine with you going out and having a good time without me because I know where your heart is.
Yeah.
And I know you'll miss me and you'll wish I was there and you'll come back and be happy to see me.
Yeah, that's good. All right, let's talk about extending grace because, you know, our spouse is not going to be perfect. Unfortunately, when we marry them, we always think they're going to be perfect and then it's such a shock. You mean they're not perfect? Oh, no. How did this happen? So we have to be gracious toward our spouse, and you have some great ideas about how to quickly extend grace. Can you walk us through some of these thoughts?
Yeah, I used an illustration where Hugh just extended grace to me because I had not been treating him well the night before. I humbled myself, and instead of saying, you know, you really were a jerk, Cindy, he humbled himself back and said, you know, I absolutely understand. And, you know, there's that verse that says we're saved by grace and faith, and it's nothing of ourselves. And we're convinced that marriage is through grace, too, that we're loved by one another not because of what we do, because we so often make mistakes, but because the other person has gifted us with some love. And so we just give some practical ways to extend grace by just, you know, extending it away to realize, okay, he was late. Mm-hmm. But I've been late before, too. So I'm going to extend grace here, and I'm not even going to mention the fact I had to wait 10 minutes before he met me for dinner.
Yeah.
Not assigning motive.
Oh, that's huge.
You know, that's a big one.
Well, okay, now talk about that, because this one, I think, is one of these subconscious things we do, and we don't even realize we're doing it. So can you give us an example of what you mean or what might happen in a marriage where we are assigning motives, and that turns out to create, well, it creates resentment and bitterness?
Well, I think something that's happened a lot lately is I will say something to my husband, and his mind might be somewhere else. He might have just gotten off a phone call that was disturbing, or he might be still in that decompression mode,
yeah.
Or he just might have a lot of things to do. And so when he'll ask me about it, you know, sometimes just a few minutes later, I'll say, are you listening? And that's not extending grace, because I'm assuming that what I'm saying is not important to him, when that wasn't the case.
Mm-hmm.
No, the case was he had some other things on his mind. It took a little longer to process and to register with him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one example of not assigning motive.
Yeah, that's good.
Another one might be, again, if he didn't meet my expectation in some way, if he was late, is that because my time isn't important to him? No, it's because he got a few too many red lights that he had to stop at before he got to me.
Mm-hmm.
Another time was we were together and he picked up the phone when somebody had called, and I was a little annoyed, and I assigned the motive, talking to that person is more important than sitting here at dinner with me.
Mm-hmm.
But it was an important phone call from a family member, and he was waiting to hear from them, so there was a part of the story I didn't know yet.
Ooh.
And, you know, just trusting that his motives are not the way I'm interpreting them.
Yeah, that is a huge one. Let's talk next about something very practical, but you say that there is something that happens when you take a walk together.
Yes, I ended up interviewing my uncle and aunt who've been married for more than 50 years, and they talked about how one thing that's a regular part of their life now is they walk 3 days a week. And I was talking to my cousin, and she said, you know, when we were growing up, it was all about us kids, and I don't remember even seeing my parents hold hands much, but now they're so close.
Oh.
And one of the things Uncle Owen and Aunt Ellis had shared with you and I was, don't wait until you're older to do that. Reconnect while your kids are still young.
Yeah.
And one of the best ways to do that is go out on a walk together. Take the kids with you if you have to. They can ride their bikes. You can walk. But it's a way of just reconnecting.
Mm-hmm.
We have some friends that walk in the morning before work.
Mm-hmm.
It gets in exercise, but it's also something that they do together.
Yeah, and you're talking the whole time. And my husband and I do this not as much as we should, but we do this probably, I'd say, at least once a week. And you know what? The whole time, we're talking, which is great. That's connection. That's intimacy, because you're sharing your thoughts, your dreams, your hopes, whatever, your challenges. So walking, and of course, it's good for your heart. So there you go. When we come back, want to talk about words that we can speak that can really encourage, because let's face it, don't we want to be around people who are encouraging us? I mean, I know I do. So if my spouse is saying the words that encourage me, I'm going to enjoy talking with him. If I say the words that encourage him, he's going to enjoy talking with me, and we're going to have that connection. So I'm hoping you can provide some ideas on encouragement that husbands long to hear, encouraging words that wives long to hear, in just a moment with my guests, Cindy and Hugh McMenamin, their book, When Couples Walk Together.
If you've been wrestling with an issue and would love some biblical advice, email your question to Debbie at DebbieChavez.com, and Debbie will address your question anonymously on an upcoming show.
You could be driving a Honda.
You can find your new Honda at NorthwestHonda.com. Our website is tailored to make your shopping experience easy. Search our entire new inventory from the comfort of your own home, or browse our quality pre-owned vehicles and get a fast quote on your trade-in. Find online internet specials, financing options, and Honda Motor Company incentives. Even schedule your next service visit and find coupons to save you money. It's all right here, right at your fingertips.
Driving Northwest Honda
at NorthwestHonda.com.
Choosing a monument for a loved one who's passed away begins with telling their unique story. A story about your loved one, their faith and beliefs, their family heritage, their legacy. Cascade Monuments can help you select a monument design that's as one-of-a-kind as they were. And Cascade Monuments provides quality memorials and markers beautifully designed by a family-owned business that is 100 years old. Visit Cascade Monuments on the web at cascademonuments.com.
Check it out, it's the Terminator. Hey, when'd you get back, huh?
Did you have to shoot anyone?
Why are you so distant? Are you not happy to see me?
So what's the deal? You gonna get a job now or what?
Why are you being so jumpy? Put all that stuff behind you, okay?
No one knows what it's like to come back from Iraq or Afghanistan unless they were there. Join other veterans at communityofveterans.org, because we know where you're coming from. Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Back in the program with my special guests, the pastor and pastor's wife, Cindy and Hugh McMenamin. When Couples Walk Together is the name of their new book. All right, so let's talk about specific words that are encouraging to husbands, and then specific words that are encouraging to wives. So what thoughts do you have for us, guys?
Well, Debbie, you know, we include a verse in that chapter of our book that says, "Let everything you say be good and helpful, so that your words will be an encouragement to those who hear them." And we have asked people, men and women, you know, generally, what encourages them? I know for men, you know, words of respect really are important, you know, to hear from their wives.
Yes.
You know, things like, "I'm proud of you," "I'm behind you all the way," "I really believe in you." Those kinds of affirmation words where they really feel like they are being, you know, acknowledged for the hard work they do, and they sincerely, you know, try to put out for their families and their wives. I think that really helps out a guy to hear that.
Yes, absolutely. And for women, what have you determined that they long to hear, Cindy?
Women love to hear that they are loved. I've heard a joke where, you know, a man hadn't said, "I love you," since the day they married, because he said, "If I've changed my mind, I'll let you know." But women still need to hear that. We long to feel cherished and desired. So we love to hear, "You're beautiful," or "You look nice today," or "You mean the world to me. I appreciate you. I respect what you do." Sometimes we're there at home and we're just with the kids all day or something like that. And when our husbands come home and they say, "Wow, you've really done a lot today. I appreciate that." It's nice to feel appreciated, like we are cutting it.
Moving on, I'm trying to just skim through some nuggets here in the book because, it's a great book. I'm going to highly recommend this one, but
we can't get
to everything. Making a memory is one of your suggestions. Give us some thoughts there.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, Debbie, when Cindy and I got married, you know, we wanted to be able to say at the end of our lives that that we had experiences that were valued more over things, you know, and that we wanted to share experiences together and do things that we can look back on and say that was an adventure together, we grew together over that, that really challenged us, that was just fun. And so, you know, we look for ways to create vacations, trips, times together where we can look back and go, that was really an empowering thing to do together.
And we laugh that one of the best memories we took together resulted on the heels of a fight where I was upset with Hugh again, and I was really angry, and I thought, you know, we've been married more than 20 years now, and we've never even been to a marriage conference. So I booked one, and I happened to do it in Las Vegas, where they had the big Star Trek experience, because my husband's a sci-fi fan.
Oh, my.
I called him up, and I said, I booked us a marriage conference, and he was really, you know, silent on the other end of the phone, not knowing what to expect, and I said, we're going to Vegas. So he's like, oh, well, cool. And it turned out to be a great time of connecting, but it was another one of those things where we did something intentional, make a memory, so that we're collecting memories through the years, not just stuff.
Yes. Oh, that's really good. You also talk about the importance of sharing your hearts with each other in a couple of specific ways, and I love the thoughts you have here about praying together as a way of sharing your hearts, and that when you pray, if you are praying together, if you listen to what your spouse is praying for, that gives you some real insights, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, and
it does, and I think that intimidates a lot of men, Debbie. you know that they're going to have to get real in prayer, and they can't fake it, and that their vulnerability is really going to be out there, you know, for their wives to see. Mm. But I think if they, you know, they work at it slowly, and they again just affirming each other in prayer, not a whole lot of huge expectations, but just coming along day by day and letting the prayer be a free flow conversation with between them and God. That can be a real way for a wife to hear the heart of her husband.
Yes, absolutely. I've never really thought about it that way, but it's true, because whatever you pray for, that is something that is on your heart that you care about. So if you're wondering what your husband's thinking, because sometimes husbands are you know, not real great talkers, that's one way to find out what's on his heart. So I like that idea. You also talk about sharing your hearts by dreaming together. Give us an example of what that might be like.
Okay. Well, Hugh often will come home and he'll tell me something he's always wanted to do. Mm. And I used to just think, oh, yeah, that's nice, but we can't afford that, and that's a little out of reach, and how are we supposed to do that? And he didn't want me to just come up with the reasons why we can't do something.
Yeah.
He wanted me to dream with him together. Mm. And he's been talking for years about wanting to go to Ireland. He's Irish. He's never seen that land. And he turns 50 this year, and so I had told him, you know, I've had many dreams come true and what I've wanted to do and write books and speak in different places. And I said, you know, it's about time that one thing you've dreamed of, that we're going to find a way to do that.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, when you affirm your spouse's dreams, you're also telling them, I care about your heart. I care about what you desire, and I want to help you get there, too.
Instead of tearing it down and finding all the reasons why it won't work, which is what a lot of women would do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So feeling a little conviction there. Laughing together, another way to build intimacy?
Mm-hmm.
Mm, so watching what, I Love Lucy together or what?
It's kind of funny because the couple that we talked to in our chapter, Laughing Together, you would have thought that they would have been the ones in the chapter on Laughing Together, but when I met with them to talk about what God has done to draw them together, they had one bad thing after another happen. She had been diagnosed with cancer, he had been injured on the job, was on disability, then he had lost his job, then they had lost a few people in the family, and it was just one thing after another. And so I expected that conversation to be about just how they were hurt and God had drawn them together. But when we were recounting things, they were able, I think by the grace of God, to look back at it and laugh. They told the story about coming back from the hospital after her husband's injury, and they forgot to take a seafood casserole out of the oven, and the house just stunk. And they were making jokes about it, and I looked at them and I said, how are you able to laugh at this? And they said, because with what we've been through, we can go through anything. And I realized laughter isn't just about good times. Mm. Laughter is a perspective of just being grateful.
Mm.
And there the joy comes. Laughter is an outpouring of joy. And so it doesn't mean just having to sit down and watch something funny.
Right.
It means how can we look at our lives in perspective and see the humor in it. And that is huge for a marriage.
Oh, yeah, I love it. Oh, and so many great other ideas in the book that we just can't get to about flirting again with your spouse. When's the last time that you tried just flirting with them or sharing a project together? When's the last time you did that? And so much more, but we don't have time for it, so we're just going to recommend that people pick up your book. How about that?
That would be great.
That'd be great. great, Debbie.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. This has just been really good stuff. And we'd like to make a couple of these books available to my friends on Facebook here in the United States. If you would like me to send a free copy to you, go ahead and email pam@debbiechavez.com and ask for the book When Couples Walk Together. And we'll see if we can get a copy to you. We'll be back in a moment with our faith and lifestyle stories of the day. In one of them, researchers discover some amazing health benefits from staying married, staying in love. We'll have that and more coming up next.
Learn Debbie's next topic, get links to intriguing news stories, and receive a daily scripture, all by signing up for Debbie's email alert at faithplace.org. Connect with Debbie on Facebook and Twitter, too. The Carolyn Merriman Show, featuring licensed therapist Carolyn Merriman.
If you face abuse that happened to you in the past, you will have experienced recovery from the emotional damage, the results, the things that flowed from that abuse. And out of that one event, that's enough. Satan says that's scary, confusing, and painful enough that I can suggest all kinds of things to you. Anxiety issues, you will have fears and insecurities, or you're not going to have emotions at all. I will guarantee you, if you stick with the recovery process and you don't stop it, you might pause every once in a while for a breather, you will have a normal set of reactions to life's changes and the hurts and things that come. Nothing like what you're experiencing before recovery.
The Carolyn Merriman Show, streaming daily at faithplace.org.
Back on the program with our faith and lifestyle stories of the day. While the Washington Post reports Americans without a college degree bore the brunt of the recent recession, and so did their marriages. According to new research at the University of Virginia, the survey of marital generosity found that 29% of couples reported that the economic downturn had put financial stress on their marriages. But here's some cool news. About a third of the couples surveyed said the recession had prompted them to work harder on saving their marriage. Is that not cool? And also, 38% of couples who were considering divorce before the recession postponed splitting because of the recession. So that's very cool news. A little silver lining there. Now, speaking of relationships, love may make the world go round, but is it powerful enough to lower one's blood pressure, reduce depression, and speed the healing of an injury? Yes, the Washington Post set out to find an answer to all those questions, and they discovered, yes, our relationships help us cope with stress. So if we have someone we can turn to for emotional support or advice, that can buffer the negative effects of stress, says Julianne Holt-Lundstad, a professor of psychology at Brigham Young University, who's been publishing studies for the past 10 years on social relationships and their influence on health and disease. And this article is just chock full of so many great bits of research about the impact of marriage and love on your health. In 2007, after reviewing research on the health effects of matrimony, the Department of Health and Human Services issued a 68-page report that found that, in general, married people are happier, they live longer, they drink less alcohol, and even have fewer doctor's appointments than unmarried folks. Now, Holt-Lundstad set out to see what kinds of links there might be between love and health, and in 2008, she identified one in a study published that year about marriage and blood pressure. She found that happily married people have lower blood pressure than unmarried people. Loving spouses tend to encourage preventive care, reinforce healthy behaviors such as exercise and flossing, and dissuade unhealthy ones such as heavy drinking, according to many studies. Romantic relationships also can provide a sense of meaning and purpose in life that can translate to better self-care and less risk-taking. Now, Arthur Aaron, a psychologist at Stony Brook University in New York, has dedicated his professional life to understanding the science of love. He actually does brain scans of people at various stages of the romantic journey. He has consistently found that feelings of love trigger the brain's dopamine reward system. Dopamine is a powerful neurotransmitter that affects pleasure and motivation. Hugging and hand-holding have been found to release the hormone oxytocin, which lowers the levels of stress hormones in the body. It also reduces your blood pressure, improves your mood, and increases tolerance for pain, according to research at the University of North Carolina. Now, if being in love makes you happy, it may also have other welcome health benefits. Fewer colds. Researchers at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh looked at healthy volunteers for their emotional styles. Those who tended to experience positive emotions, such as being happy and pleased and relaxed, were found to be more resistant to common colds than people who are usually depressed or hostile. A happy marriage may also speed the rate that your wounds heal. According to a 2005 study at Ohio State University, it found that a married couple's 30-minute positive, supportive discussion actually sped up their body's ability to recover from an injury by at least one full day. Wow, isn't that interesting? Now, for those who aren't in love right now, all is not lost. Holt Lundstad and colleagues found that strong connections to friends and family and neighbors improve odds of survival by 50%. Wow. Meanwhile, it's worth noting that love gone wrong can have health consequences as well. Divorce can actually damage one's physical health so dramatically that the person never recovers. A 2009 study in the Journal of Health and Social Behavior found that divorced or widowed people have 20% more chronic health conditions, such as heart disease, diabetes, and cancer, than married people do. They also have 23% more mobility limitations, such as trouble walking upstairs. Remarriage does offset that trend a bit, but not completely. So, fabulous article, and I've posted it at faithplace.org. Just click on the news stories, and then you'll see this link. And you might want to print this for yourself because, man, it just goes into detail about all the health benefits of being married. Next. Whoa, employers, a court case may set a troubling new precedent that you'll want to be aware of. According to the Seattle Times, employers should think twice before trying to restrict employees from talking about their jobs on Facebook. That's the message the government sent yesterday as it settled a closely watched lawsuit against a Connecticut ambulance company that fired an employee after she criticized management on Facebook. The National Labor Relations Board sued the company last year, arguing the workers' negative comments were protected speech under federal labor laws. The company claimed it fired the emergency medical technician because she was complaining about her work on Facebook. Well, under the settlement with the labor board, the ambulance company agreed to change its blogging and internet policy that barred workers from disparaging the company or its supervisors. The company also will revise another policy that prohibited employees from depicting the company in any way over the internet without permission. Wow, and this could have ramifications for other companies that apparently now need to let workers blast you. I mean, she had expletives in her Facebook about the management and basically... The National Labor Relations Board said, no, that's protected speech. Oh, boy. Well, let's turn to health news next. Parents will want to hear this. A French newspaper is reporting that toddlers who have a diet high in processed foods may have a slightly lower IQ in later life. According to a British study, it was a huge study, by the way, the conclusion comes from a long-term investigation into 14,000 people whose health and well-being were monitored at the ages of 3, 4, 7, and 8.5. Parents of the children filled out questionnaires about what they ate and drank and that kind of thing, and then they had their IQ measured at the age of 8.5. Well, the children who ate the most processed food had an average IQ of 101 points compared with 106 points for children who ate the most health-conscious food. The association between IQ and nutrition is strongly debated issue because it can be skewed by many factors like economic and social background, but the research team here took special care to filter out all of those variables, and the size of the study, too, was just unprecedented, so food for thought there, pardon the pun, that you might want to keep your kids away from processed foods. And ladies, you are going to love this bit of news. WebMD reports a new study suggests that dark chocolate and cocoa powder may be the next superfoods thanks to their high antioxidant content. Woohoo! Researchers found the antioxidant activity of dark chocolate and cocoa powder was equivalent to or higher than that found in some other so-called superfruit powders or juices like blueberries, cranberries, pomegranate. Antioxidants, by the way, are a group of compounds known to fight the damaging effects of oxidative stress on cells within the body, and they're increasingly thought to have many heart-healthy properties. And dark chocolate, they found, had the highest total flavanol content per serving at more than 500 milligrams, followed by cocoa beverages at about 400. All of the superfruit juices had less than 200 milligrams per serving of this type of important antioxidant. Now, researchers do say it's important to note that the cocoa powders, cocoa beverages, and dark chocolate used in their study contained natural or non-alkalized cocoa. And alkalization is a process used to mellow the flavor of cocoa, but it also destroys important compounds. Most hot cocoa mixes, for instance, contain alkalized cocoa and thus contain few or no antioxidants. So you need to look for cocoas and such that is not alkalized. It's also worth noting that the number of calories and fat grams per serving of dark chocolate is much higher than that of fruit juices, which means, yes, it's a potential superfood, but you need to enjoy the dark chocolate and the cocoa powder in moderation. But still, isn't that fabulous news and great cause for me to go out and buy dark chocolate today? While talking about food, it's time for our heart-healthy recipe of the day. This is a Greek pasta dish. Using chicken breasts and sun-dried tomatoes, black olives, whole wheat penne pasta, some feta cheese, some chicken broth in there. Mmm, lovely. Each serving 310 calories, just 2 grams of saturated fat, 6 grams of fiber in there because of the whole wheat penne pasta, 19 grams of protein per serving. And you can print this recipe for free right now at faithplace.org. Just click on the Healthy Living tab and you can print that for yourself. Coming up in 10 minutes on the Carolyn Merriman Show, help for spouses who are married to people who experienced childhood trauma. Wow. That'll be coming up in 10 minutes at faithplace.org. And until we meet again, may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in Him.